Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, or on your smart speaker by asking it to play ESPN New York 98.7.
Hey Alexa, play ESPN New York 98.7.
Michael K., Don LaGreca, and Peter Rosenberg apart but together for the next 4 hours. The other 20, they are certainly your responsibility. And as I mentioned, a gorgeous day in the tri-state area. I hope you're enjoying the day as much as you possibly can. And it seems that we are moving closer and closer to possibly getting the major sports back. Now, you might say, well, Michael, what about the disconnect between the owners and the players in Major League Baseball yesterday? I get it. It was the first salvo. I truly believe that baseball and the players will come to an agreement. I'm not a big fan of the scorched earth negotiating policy, because you are going to leave hurt feelings. And if the owner's plan is to make the players look greedy, it doesn't make sense to me. And for this reason, they're the stars of the show. Why do you want to cheapen and lessen the attraction for your stars to the show? They are your product. The more you make them look bad, the more the product makes them look bad. Nobody is buying a ticket because of an owner. People are buying tickets to see players play. So, yeah, I think it's going to get done. But I wonder, will there be wounds so deep that fans won't feel the same way about the players they love? And the union, will they lock down and go, you know what? After next season, the collective bargaining agreement is going to be one tough cookie to come to an agreement on. They're not going to give in on anything. I think there was a way to do this without being a scorched earth, but I just think that that's their way. They don't want to just win. They want to win at all cost, and they want to win decisively. I don't think that's going to happen this time. I think both sides are going to have to bend just a little bit, because the owners stay entrenched at this position, players won't accept it. And the players stay entrenched at this position, the owners won't give in. There has to be some meeting in the middle, or close to the middle, and I think that will happen, because maybe I'm just a pie-in-the-sky optimist, but I don't believe that either side is that dumb. Well,
I mean, I had a similar philosophy in 2004 when the NHL was about to lock out and make a decision to cancel their season. I thought to myself, how could you do that? You're the fourth sport. In some areas of the country, you're the fifth sport. You know, your national television money's not there. There's interest in major cities that's completely lacking. Rangers hadn't gone to the playoffs in forever. Blackhawks haven't gone to the playoffs in forever. Kings hadn't gone to the playoffs in forever. Hockey was almost nowhere. They couldn't possibly cancel an entire season. That would kill the sport. Guess what? They did it. Because they got so involved in their own side and in pointing to the other side as to blame for everything, that they eventually, it ended up happening. So I'm not trying to be pessimistic, Michael, or to knock you down for being optimistic, but I think your optimism is a tad bit misguided, because when it's all said and done, they care about themselves. So I'm not sure if they care about the growth of the sport, how bad they're going to look. The owners want to get theirs. The players are going to get theirs. Michael, if the NHL struggling to be the fourth sport in this country can cancel an entire season, you don't think baseball can do the exact same thing?
Well, sure, they could. I mean, they canceled the World Series. So this isn't just pie in the sky optimism, though, because from what I've heard, this is all part of the process, and it's going to get done. It doesn't behoove either side to cancel this season. Now, the owners, I think, are going to lose the money no matter what.
Right.
But do the players want to lose everything, make no money whatsoever? So I think that there's some give on both sides. Remember, the players said, under no circumstances are we negotiating any more monetary aspects of this. That was taken care of on March 26th. Well, what'd they do yesterday? They took a proposal from the owners for monetary situation. So they're open to listening. We'll see. Now, if I'm the players, though, and this is going to sound weird, if I'm the players, I would not give in a way, because I know that if we don't, we'll be looked at in a really bad way by the public. Public hates them anyway. I mean, the public loves them as players, but the public is jealous of them. Every single work stoppage, they've always been blamed, even when they've been right. So that shouldn't move the needle. The thing that bothers me is that the owners would want to make the players look bad when the players are the product. The owners should come to this has to be done behind closed doors with no leaking whatsoever. Don't do this in public. It's offensive to everybody, especially during this time in the nation's history. Just get it done. Well, don't come out from under the cloak of secrecy until you say we have an agreement. Just don't do it. We don't care.
Well, Peter will appreciate this because the way he looks at baseball is the way a lot of people look at baseball. And one of the reasons why its popularity has waned in recent years. The owners have devalued the players for years. Right? They're always looking for a way to get them more cheap. Right? They've been caught colluding before. There's been allegations of collusion recently, although we don't necessarily buy it, but the accusations are there. Their biggest star is Mike Trout. Nobody knows what he looks like. It's not promoted.
That's why I think the NBA players love Silver, because he realizes they're the product. They promote basketball players endlessly.
But baseball is a regional sport driven by the teams, right? So, listen, a Yankee fan's going to be a Yankee fan, Michael, and they're going to want to see their team win, right? They love certain players because those players help them win. In the NBA, the players really move the needle because you could sit and watch LeBron James and not really care what team he's on or care who wins or loses.
True.
You just want to watch LeBron James. You want to watch Damian Lillard. You want to go out and watch Steph Curry. You can care less about Portland or Golden State or Cleveland, Miami, or Los Angeles, wherever LeBron is. But baseball's not that way. You know, it's not driven by the players. And the owners probably don't feel like, well, that's our product. No, their product's the game. Their product is the team. It's the New York Yankees. It's the Los Angeles Dodgers.
But that's
it's
what's
the
so
San
limiting.
Francisco Giants.
That's why they're stuck in the place they're in, though, too.
Absolutely.
They still think the best thing to sell is this sport that, while it's immensely popular, doesn't reach everybody, and they don't focus enough on the great talent and personalities they have.
You can make the case, and correct me if I'm wrong, Michael, they do that partially for situations like this.
Right.
But because they don't feel like they have to cave to the players because at the end of the day, there isn't that LeBron James that's going to move the needle. Yeah, there's Aaron Judge moves the needle in New York. Does he necessarily move the needle in Dallas, Texas? I don't know. You know, so that's by design, Peter, to try to keep the players at bay.
But it's funny, though, because there's no more evil, greedy group of men and women than the NFL owners. I mean, they crush that union every single time. They never lose. And now they have 10 years of labor peace coming up. And that's what baseball needs. Don't sign a short CBA. Sign a long one so then you're all collaborating and you're in it together and you're actually promoting the players rather than looking at them as adversaries. Now, Jeff Passan was on SportsCenter with Scott Van Pelt last night, and he gave some thoughts on MLB's offer.
I see a first offer that went too far. And I'm not sure what the calculus was behind this offer. Listen, first offers are always going to be a little bit outlandish. That's what negotiating is about. And I think we have to understand that. And it's why today I'm not sitting here saying there's not going to be a Major League Baseball season. The big question, Scott, is how the Players Association is going to respond to this now. Are they just going to sit back and say, you know what, this doesn't even warrant us coming back to you with a proposal? Are they going to use this and say, now that we have all of our players working together, now that we have the force of them behind us, we're going to go and ask for what we want. And we're going to go and try and put the pressure on Major League Baseball, knowing that the league ultimately, like the players, wants to play baseball games.
All right, let's check in on every sport. All right, so that's baseball right now. They do not have any virtual meeting set up for today. We'll see what the players come back with. This is going to be a process that's going to bleed into next week, I believe. So let's check in now with Woj. He was on with Will Cain, and he was asked, what's the next step for the NBA?
Adam Silver and the Players Association are drilling down this week into the details of what the structure is going to look like. How many regular season games, how many teams are going to be asked to return, And then what's the pathway to into the playoffs for those teams? There's a Board of Governors meeting on Friday afternoon, Greeny. And that's going to be an opportunity for the owners and Adam Silver to go through the details of a potential plan or move closer to finalizing a potential plan. And so, you know, I think there's some answers coming here by the end of the week for how an NBA return is going to look.
So obviously that was Woj on Get Up with Greeny. This was Woj earlier today with Will Cain. And he says that the NBA, he doesn't look at it as coming back and playing those final regular season games. He said the NBA tournament will, in fact, be more than 16 teams, which is what the tournament is every year in a regular year. So here's Woj.
16 plus. Now, whether that's we have 20 teams or 24 teams, I don't think it's going to just be – I think it's unlikely it's 30, and I think it's unlikely that it's just 16. I think there's something in between – that brings teams back, lets them have some games that essentially be treated as play-in games or pool play, and that might be the middle ground where there's enough. The teams you're bringing back feel like they have a chance to get in the playoffs, and it's reason enough for them to go through a month of training camp and quarantine to come back and try to make a run at it.
All right, I would love some World Cup-style group stage, Michael, at the beginning there.
That might be the way they go because, bottom line, Peter, they have to incentivize teams to come back if they're not in the playoffs. I just think playing those games, eight games to get to the 70 mark or whatever, you heard yesterday what some players are saying. I'm not coming back. And I mean great players. Damian Lillard said, I'm not coming back.
And he's not good.
He's great. Here's Michael Wilbon on PTI. And he says that the NHL playoffs are somewhat confusing.
All things considered, I think it will make for something that's confusing as hell. But, Tony, it's exciting as it is. I mean, I don't like this just trumped up sort of playoff format, which I don't even know who's going to be playing. And by the way, I was a little surprised, though, I mean, this is not confusing, that the big cities he was mentioning as potential sites, one in the East, one in the West. But going back to the format and whether it's exciting, the games are exciting. That's what's exciting. And, you know, you're not going to have an arena where it's arguably the most exciting thing you've ever seen. You can't have that. It's not the league's fault. But, man, this other stuff, Tony, you just said something. I heard Bettman say it, and I couldn't regurgitate it. I'm taking notes here. I'm like you. I got a legal pad full of notes. I have no idea what the hell he just said.
Listen. I'm brilliant. I mean, my IQ is over 160.
Wow. Yes.
But I wouldn't say that I'm the brightest guy when it comes to hockey. It doesn't seem confusing to me at all. Is it confusing to you, Don?
You know, I saw this was late in the show, and we couldn't squeeze it in. And I watched it, and I'm like, listen, I have all the respect in the world for Mike. I think he's terrific. Smart guy. How confusing is it? You know the matchups, right? You look up where what your team's playing. Rangers are playing the Hurricanes. Islanders are playing the Panthers. You look it up. They right alongside of it, it tells you because of the bracket that the NHL's been using for the last 7 years, you'll know who they're going to play when they win. If you win the preliminary round, you're now in the playoffs. Rangers will play the Washington Capitals.
Yeah, what's so confusing about
it? I don't understand how it's confusing. And the NHL, more than the NBA, had a lot of fringe teams that needed those last 12 to 14 games to possibly get into the playoffs. You know, so it would be unfair to tell the Islanders, go walk when you're a point out of a playoff spot with two games in hand on Columbus. So I think it was fair. I don't think there's any confusion at all. Really, I'm surprised at him. I don't know whether he wasn't paying attention or just wanted to kill him.
Fair. I think it's fair, Jace. It punishes the teams who are not in the top four in each conference. If you think that's fair, I understand that you're saying the top four teams in each conference earned it, but you would say it negatively impacts 5 through 8.
Oh, no,
more than anyone
not,
else.
No, but and that's fair. That's not what he said.
No. He
said it was confusing.
No. I don't think it's fair, but I also don't think it's confusing.
Hey, listen. Pittsburgh having to play an extra round is unfair.
Right.
You know, Carolina, who unfortunately, you know, would have been in the playoffs, now has to play a team that would not have been in the playoffs, and it's a team that owns them. Right.
Right.
So. Yeah, but Michael said this brilliantly when this whole thing started.
He's a brilliant guy.
You got to throw fairness out the window, man. you know, we're in a pandemic. People are dying. We're lucky to be able to get it back at all. So there's going to be a few teams, Mike, guys, that are going to be like, this isn't fair. All right. Like Alex Killorn, who was the player rep for the Tampa Bay Lightning. Lightning were one of the two teams that voted against this format.
And Carolina.
And Carolina was the other one. Carolina said because they just felt it was unfair they got to play a team that wasn't in the playoffs. Tampa was concerned that they were going to be rusty because they're going to be sitting in a bye situation. But now we find out there's going to be a chance to reseed with them playing in a round-robin tournament. But Alex Killorn painstakingly said, though, hey, we voted against it because we just didn't like the format, but we think that the committee's done a great job. We're just happy to be back. Like, they didn't want to insult anybody. They just had to put it to a vote, you know? So there's going to be people that are going to be a little upset, but, hey, isn't that better than scrapping the entire season or doing something completely off the wall, like having the worst team in the league have a chance to win a championship?
All right, let's move to the NFL now. D'Amara Smith is the head of the NFL Players Association. And he was on SportsCenter, and one thing that he really stressed, you can't start the season and then stop it. Here's D'Amara Smith.
Nothing would be more disastrous, I think, both economically and from a morale decision, is to be in a world where we haven't asked the right questions, haven't made the right decisions. We don't know things that we should know at the time. And for whatever reasons, we have to suspend operations. To me, that would be probably the worst case scenario that any of us would face, because it would necessarily mean that we are suspending operations because we now see a new and more dangerous threat to the community.
Now, the other sport that we haven't discussed is college football. And Booger McFarland was interviewed in The Athletic by Richard Deitch, and he brought up a great point. He said, I don't understand. Most of the colleges are saying that we can't have fans in the stands because they're too close. So we're going to eliminate that. Ohio State has said they probably try to put 20,000 people in a 104,000-seat stadium. But Booger made this point. He said, so you can't have students sitting in the stands close to each other, but you could have 18, 19, and 20-year-olds playing football, breathing on each other, sweating on each other, bleeding on each other. He said, if my kid was a college football player, I wouldn't allow it. If it's not good for students to sit in the stands, it's not good for my kid to play. He said, professionals, that's a different story. These are adults. They're men. They can make the decision whether or not they want to take on that kind of risk. He said, college kids should not be put in a position where they're told to go play. He said, the parents have to step in and say, no, if you can't sit close in the stands, you can't play on the field closely either. But that's a good point.
It's a good point to a point. But again, what's the plan? Like, you put together a plan, like the NHL's got the plan. You could return to your facility, still have to practice social distancing, still have to wear a mask when you're not on the ice or exercising. You're going to get tested twice a week. Temperatures are going to be taken before you go into the facility. So there's a controlled environment where it's not 100% foolproof, but at least you're in control of the players coming and going, and they're being tested. You can't control 100,000 people in Michigan. Who's tested? Who's wearing a mask? Like, so there is a difference, Michael. You just got to tell the parents what the plan is.
Right.
And if you're not comfortable with the plan, by all means, do not let them play. But it's apples and oranges, because the people on the field will be in somewhat of a controlled environment. The fans in the stands, Michael, they're not being tested. They're not practicing social distancing. They might have had their mat. They might put their mask on when they hit their seat or when they came into the building. They may not have been practicing social distancing at all before they even got into the building. So you can't compare the two. One's a controlled environment and one's completely out of control.
1-800-919-3776. Let's talk about all of this. And we have some great guests today. At 3:45, the GM of the Islanders, Lou Lamoriello, is going to join us. At 4 o'clock, because it's Wednesday,
That's right.
Trey Wingo.
Wingle.
5 o'clock, the president.
What?
Of the New York Rangers.
Oh.
Disappointed or relieved?
No.
President of the New York Rangers, John Davidson, will join us.
In all fairness, why would you ask him that question? Especially after what happened last night.
He can't know my leanings.
What happened last night?
What you said at the end of the show.
Oh, please.
You crippled him emotionally.
Oh.
And it's gone viral, his face. I mean, all the times, all the things that you've ever done. And listen, I backed it. I laughed at it. But I've never seen a look of hurt on somebody's face during this show.
So oh, really?
The fact that I laughed at it, Peter, I apologize.
Were you looking at the screen the three times he took broadside shots at me during the show? Or
I don't,
last
I,
week
I,
when
Michael,
he said Gary
I've known
Cohn
you
is so much
going,
better than you?
I've known you for going on 20 years.
I think I made some salient points.
For going on 20 years. You've never made that face.
Because you it's impossible to hurt me. I've been hurt too much.
You've never showed hurt the way he showed. And it was captured. Unfortunately, in this day and age, it gets captured.
And the video with it in it, almost 100,000 views.
I mean, that could be like the Jordan crying meme. Like the next time somebody gets hurt, that might be the meme. That might be what gets showed.
You cannot backpedal, Don. Your hamstrings aren't that strong. You were laughing to the point
that you almost
apologized.
I laughed hysterically because it was hilarious. And I laughed because I'm a human being. But now, looking back at it, it was as devastating a shot as... Now, it is the most devastating shot anybody has taken on anyone in the history of the show.
Wow. RJ, do we have the audio, by the way? Because people probably have no idea what we're talking about. Let's get him on the show.
I'd love to, but I don't know if he's a real big sports fan, but...
Does it really matter?
No, it doesn't. You're on the show. Again, why don't you play all the times he just smacked me in the face yesterday for no reason?
Well,
he knows what I'm talking about. I'll tell you what, when the clock hit 7 and Chris Carlin started talking, I can assure you that Peter did not think about what I said for one second.
Has a harder punch been thrown in the history of boxing than Tyson's punch to Spinks? Yeah, I'm sure there's been plenty of punches
that were
more devastating. However, the reaction to it,
the face.
No, you know what it was?
Is what made that devastating. Because I'm sure there's been tougher punches, but if Spinks doesn't go down, we're not talking about it.
You want to know the boxing equivalent of that moment, Don?
Marvis Frazier.
You may not remember this. No, this is perfect. When Floyd Mayweather and De La Hoya had their big fight, it ended on a Mayweather body shot where De La Hoya just went down to one knee and was like, "Oh!" He couldn't breathe. The air coming out of his lungs from this shot right in the stomach that he never saw coming. That's what it was. I had to go down to one knee and just hold my stomach to catch my breath from the pain because of this broadside shot that
were there harder punches in the history of boxing?
Of course there were.
But we are reacting to the reaction. So Michael might have gotten tougher shots, but it's the reaction and the hurt.
Yeah,
Consider taking off today.
I didn't give it a second thought.
But I will
even after
this.
The picture. Like, but in fairness, because there's such a delay on my monitor. My monitor is the TV in my basement. I didn't see the look until after. You don't tell me the look had. You tell me the look had no effect on you.
None.
Then,
you're talking about this look right here. This is what we have to do these days.
I'm not even sure you can replicate it, Peter.
There you go. Take a look at your monitor. I've got to move it over here. That's what it looked like. That's what pain and hurt looks like.
No effect, Michael?
None.
Zero.
He deserved it.
Wow.
He deserved it. I should have followed up.
Wow. What's
the great boxers follow up.
I know. If you followed up, it might have been a kill shot.
Well, he got up. He took care of his chicken right after that, if you remember.
I did. I took care of my chicken. I'll tell you what.
Take care of y'all chicken.
The chicken I made yesterday was the best food I've ever made, period. It was juicy, delicious, flavorful. Oh, I was so proud.
Now, while good, not weep-worthy, I think they've changed the recipe.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Yeah.
Catch the show on demand whenever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
John in New Jersey. Start it off, John.
Michael,
how you doing?
I have a simple question about baseball. It's something I don't understand. Maybe you can help me out.
Okay.
Why doesn't the players and the owners, enough with the money, play baseball? Who cares about this year? I care about the future. There's no one watching baseball now.
Wait,
get
you don't
on
think
the court.
They should play?
You'll be the only one on.
Yeah, but that's what these guys do for a living.
1 year, they're investing in their own future. The owner,
but there are some players that this could be the last year these players play. This could be their last season. So, yeah, I think that everybody should make concessions, John, but you don't make concessions and play for free. They're not going to do that. No other sport
is doing
that. No one's
saying for free, but they both should be fighting to get on the court, not to get more money. That's what I'm just missing.
You have to understand one thing, though, John. This is a negotiation. Now, why is it being made public? I have absolutely no idea. It's ridiculous that's being made public. But this is called negotiating. So the owners started out with a roundhouse right. They didn't come in and jab. They threw a really nasty punch. Let's see how the players come back. But don't be startled. This is what negotiations in any business are like. This is what they are. They're nasty. They get nasty.
But normally they're under circumstances that people can kind of understand it because it's the real world. But, you know, we're not in the real world anymore. So I can understand fans feeling that way. You're absolutely right, and they have the right to negotiate. But under the current climate, a lot of people aren't going to get it.
Well, I understand. That's why this shouldn't be made public. Let's go to Alan in Queens. Alan.
Hi, Michael. How are you doing? This is how I would compromise. I would give to the top 25 a 15% reduction from 50.6 to 35.6, and that's how I would compromise. Instead of reducing the other players by 25%, I reduce it by 15%, and I wouldn't touch the other players' salaries at all.
Well, I mean, what you're doing, you're trying to divide the union. I mean, because the wealthiest players are going to say, well, why are we footing the whole bill? And that's exactly what this was. Let's divide the union. Because there's enough, they talk about the 1% in the world. I mean, the heavily salaried guys are a small minority of the 700 baseball players. So if you're going to take more from them and less from the guys that make closer to the minimum, you're going to have the majority vote in all likelihood. Is the union going to allow itself to be splintered like that? I mean, everybody should take their haircut, but that's what's been going on in corporate America. I mean, that's what went on at ESPN, right? They asked the top 100 earners in the company to take a salary cut. They didn't take the 101st earner or the 102nd. The top 100 people, the top 100 salaries were asked if they would take a reduction in pay while they got through this. So, I mean, there is precedent for this happening, but this is so public and the names are out there. I mean, why does it fall on Mike Trout and Garrett Cole to get the sport started? I don't quite get that. Because the richest people of all are the owners. So if you're just going to go, well, let's make the richest people, you know, take the biggest hit. Well, the owners are the richest people.
Right. Then have the players make the regular salary and the teams take the hit.
And I don't think that's fair either. I think everybody should take some sort of a hit, the owners and the players. But to ask the players and just the highest paid players to take the hit, that's kind of unfair.
What I would ask the players, if you win, don't you kind of still lose? Not just because the popularity of the sport could be hurt, but also, don't you think the owners will try to get back at you at some point down the road?
Yep.
Won't you see free agent? We talk about collusion before, Michael. Won't you see salaries go down because there'll be some owners like, I'm not going to pay that money anymore. I mean, you guys won. We had to pay you for half a season, and we got screwed over. Well, guess what? Next time a free agent, I'm not paying them.
This is what's going to happen, I believe. And Joel Sherman has actually suggested this in the Post, and I believe that this is the thing that's going to get done. They're going to defer these salaries. We'll pay you over the next 20 years. You'll get your money, but like what Bobby Bonilla gets. He gets $1.3 million every year till 2035. Yeah.
Ichiro got a similar deal in Seattle.
Yeah, defer the money, you'll get it, and it'll be like a nice little pension plan for everybody. You'll get the money, and then the players will say, we'll do that, but you have to promise us that it's not going to affect the upcoming free agency during this offseason. I mean, there's going to be a give and take like that. I think that's the ultimate solution. Let's go to Chuck. He's in New Jersey. Chuck? Yo, Chuck.
Chuck.
Hello?
Where were you, Chuck?
Yes. Hello?
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 Goodbye. Let's go to
that was
Bill
sad.
In Oakland. Bill.
Right. Take my call. How's everybody doing?
Good. How are you, Bill?
I'm doing very well. So, Mike, you stole my thunder a little bit. I thought I had a real original idea, but now you just quoted Joel Sherman's article. What I was thinking was, you know, let's just say you obviously you're cutting the season in half. Everyone already has agreed to cut their salaries in half. What I thought was, deferring the salaries based on actual loss of revenue instead of having a perception of what the loss of revenue would be. And I saw like a Garrett Cole number where his salary would be cut 77%. That's crazy. You actually do not know how much money you're going to lose. So let's just say they play the 82 games and maybe loss of revenue is 30%. I think that's a concession that everyone does take a fair hit.
I like the way you're thinking, Bill, but the players don't trust the owners to give them a fair accounting of what they lost. That's the problem.
That I agree with. And, Mike, just while I have you, I have a little bit of a spin on your idea with the fans in the stands with the picture.
Go for it.
So I would feel a little awkward seeing myself. I'm a decent-looking guy, but I wouldn't pay $20 to have my face in right field. I think a great idea for the more maniacal person, maybe like you and I, is you take a picture of your worst enemy, the least flattering picture ever.
Oh, it's fantastic.
You pay the $50 and you put them right in center field. No, so then they have to look at it.
I love it.
You know what I would do, Bill? I would take the picture of Peter's face, the face look, after I insulted him.
You know, why are you saying
and,
this?
Yeah, and I would pay for maybe 100 of those to be sprinkled throughout the stadium.
Nice. That's really nice. Because now that's going to happen.
I'm going to do it. It is going to happen.
If this ever happens, if this ever all comes forward now, people are going to do that thing.
And you know why I am going to do it, Peter? Because you shot down my idea so viciously. And Don even agreed with me. And now, after I got back at you with a terrible comment at the end of the show and you made that face, it ties it all together.
Well, that's kind of the way Jordan thought.
Yeah.
And
you are like Jordan.
And Peter's Isaiah Thomas. It just, I don't see it being
what Peter did was worse than Isaiah, so the punishment has to be worse.
Can you believe that, though? We're on the same team. That's the difference.
Well,
you know,
we're kind of used to Michael just not being the complete team player that he should be.
Yeah, you think?
Let's go to Dick in Pennington. Dick?
Yeah. Thanks, guys, for letting me talk.
You got it.
I wanted to switch up to the NBA. I had a thought of... you know, everybody says they need to play some to get in shape. So I thought, you know, you bring all the teams back, you play a 2-week, you know, 14-game schedule or something like that to get everybody in shape. And then you take the top 24 teams, first eight to top eight teams, get by. The next 16 play a best out of three series to fill the other eight slots so you have a top 16 playoff. The bottom eight teams have a playoff to see who gets the number one pick.
See, I like the way you're thinking, Dick, but the players on teams don't care about a number one pick. They don't. I mean, they're not investing in it because that number one pick could take their job. They might not be on the team that benefits from it. So, you know, to say, okay, the playoff teams play a playoff, and then the rest of the teams just play for the number one pick, the players don't care. They don't care. So, I mean, the players that do care, that like have a long-term contract, are they going to tank those games so that they get the number one pick? You're never going to get players to care, to buy into who's going to get the highest pick. It just doesn't work that way.
And so what he's saying, just throw away for the other thing, which was a
You're
pretty good
You're throwing away
idea.
60 games.
You can't throw away 60 games. You got to honor, you've played so many games. I could see if this happened a couple of weeks into the season, that'd be a different story. But you've played enough basketball where you should be honored if you're the top seed, if you're the Bucks, you shouldn't have to play a 2-week tournament to prove that you belong. You should be the one seed.
All right, we are going to talk to Lou Lamoriello in just a moment and ask him what he thinks of the proposal that Gary Bettman had made. A lot of people are saying that Bernard Hopkins was KO'd. Bernard Hopkins KO'd De La Hoya with that body
shot. That is
shot.
Absolutely correct. I'm so sorry. I said Floyd. It was Hopkins and De La Hoya. That was shameful. Well, I leave again. I'm going to quit again?
No.
Because they're right. I got it wrong. I knew it felt wrong coming out of my mouth.
But you know what? You're man enough to say you got it wrong.
I did get it wrong.
Beautiful.
I remember both fights well, but I just confused them right there. So
that's all right.
What are you going to do?
Don't you worry about it. I've got your back, my friend. You're my teammate.
Oh, wow.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show? Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Look what we have here. Michael K. hates lists.
List stink.
Now he wants to take over Donnie's top five list.
Strap on. Strap it in.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, K. Let's see what you got.
Come at me, nerds. Come at me.
It's the Daily Mike. Take it away, Michael.
Oh, thank you, Brown. Sure. So yesterday,
yeah,
we had the top five Don rants, and it was received very well.
Very well.
Now, I'm not going to go into this one because for some reason, again, Peter has not shown up on time in a segment that we really need him. So not only does he not know sports, but he's also very tardy.
Yes, he's got a little bit of a clock issue, but I'm ready for you, Michael.
All right, so we'll do it with you. And to say that I'm slightly miffed by him doesn't quite cover it.
Okay.
All right. We both love a good sitcom, right?
Oh, yeah.
And we both appreciate good-looking people.
Oh, sure.
He's back. Good.
Oh, look at that.
I was dealing with something. Can you just relax? You know, you don't need me. I don't know anything about sports. Just keep your
little show going.
About
sports. This is why you did key in this one.
I'm not.
Today's
I didn't miss it.
List is the top five most beautiful sitcom actresses since 1990.
Well, 1990?
Well, because I don't want to get into Elizabeth Montgomery, who was a knockout on Bewitched, and Lucille Ball was beautiful, and Betty White. And Suzanne Summers, so those are all out. So these are shows that at least had 5 years in the 90s, even if they started in the 80s.
So easy. Your number one is so easy.
You want to take it, Peter, so maybe you can get back in his good graces.
Jennifer Aniston.
She is number one with her great run on Friends and Absolute Beauty, and to this day, also a beautiful woman. She is the top most beautiful woman in sitcom history.
Yes, and there's no question.
No question.
I am going to venture guess Leah Remi.
You know what? I thought about it.
Did you?
I swear she's right here. And she probably, if you made me say, she probably was either sixth or seventh.
Okay, I can understand that.
But a very beautiful woman from.
I'm going to say one that Don, I'm guessing is not on the list, but that's why I'm saying it.
All right.
To prove a point. Because she should be, and she's still killing it on TV.
Right.
And that would be one, Christina Applegate.
She's number three on the list, Peter.
Oh, wow.
For her turn on Married with Children, she's killing it. Dead to Me.
Very into Dead to Me now. I'm fully into Michael.
She's a beautiful, beautiful woman, and she has certainly evolved from, you know, the sex pot that was... She was on Married with Children, now an accomplished actress. And
she was more than a sex pot on Married with Children, by the way. She was a very comedic role, if you really go back and watch it. You, of course, didn't pay attention. But there was, Don, wouldn't you agree there was comedic nuance to the Applegate character on that show?
There's comedic nuance to Jodie Applegate, too. It's just, it runs
maybe
in the
looking
family.
Back at it, Peter, but at the time, that wasn't your thinking.
All right, so she's very number funny. Three.
All right, I've got number two.
All right.
Kali Cuoco.
She's number four, Don.
Ooh,
she's
okay.
Number four. Big Bang Theory, a tour de force in that. Also in the John Ritter vehicle, that's where she really started a comedy career.
That's right.
What's she from again? Who is she again?
She is Penny on Big Bang Theory. Kali Cuoco.
Seven Simple Rules.
Thank you. Very good. Or Eight Simple Rules, I think.
Eight Simple Rules, right.
All right, so we have... I think the next two are going to be tough for both of you.
I mean, would you go there? I'm wondering if you would go there.
That's what makes this list great.
Julie Louise Dreyfus, would you go there?
I went there. She's number five.
Absurd. Sorry.
An elegant, beautiful woman from her time at Seinfeld. Also, other sitcoms. She's done Vice. She's definitely one of the most beautiful sitcom actresses ever.
Here's the thing. I mean, I don't agree, but I know you're thinking, so I'm very happy I got it.
By the way, and Don, that was the only other person I had left in the chamber to guess, honestly, because, again, these lists are your guys' lists, and we know how Michael feels about Seinfeld, so it just...
But here's my thing. I would never call... I thought she was cute on Seinfeld. I think she's better looking now. I think she's more elegant and beautiful now.
She's done great.
She's a beautiful lady.
So we're one light.
You're
Peter,
one away. And this one, I thought. I mean, you guys, if you're smart, I mean, this is the number two on the list. How have you not said this yet?
Number two on the list from the 90s on. Delta Burke, Designing Women. Final answer.
You know, I thought about her.
Okay,
but who are you taking out?
She was beautiful.
Shows that Michael watches.
The 90s.
What's her name? I know.
How about this is simple. How about the same show, Courtney Cox?
You know what? I thought about it, and it was very tough to leave her off, but she is not on the list. That's a good guess, though, Peter. A really good guess.
Thank you.
You know sitcoms and beautiful women, I'll tell you that. Why is my music different than your list?
It's a different show.
It's a different. All right. Just because I never watched the show, but you always talked about it with Andrew. It was a Fox show. I can't think the name of it.
New Girl?
New Girl. Zooey Deschanel?
You know what? There's two women on that show I thought about, and they didn't make the list. Zooey Deschanel.
Neither.
And look this woman up. Hannah Simone, who was the friend of Zooey's character on New Girl.
So
they both came very close to making this list, but unfortunately,
Peter, does he talk about? He talks about Big Bang. He always talked about Seinfeld and Friends. So what other show that does he talk about?
Ryan,
because that's the angle I'm taking.
You shouldn't always think like that.
But I don't. I really don't know any other shows.
How about Michael? Ryan has rang in with a few ideas.
Okay,
he threw out Deborah Messing.
No, did not make the list.
Patricia Heaton. Well, I don't know who that is.
Everyone Loves Raymond. No, yeah. She did not.
And Fran Drescher.
Thought about it. Didn't even make the almost list, but thought about it. Tell Ryan to pipe down.
God, so
this is
not a show we've.
Can I tell you one thing, Don?
Yes.
When number two is revealed, you're going to be upset, and it's going to take you out of your game for the next couple of segments.
Oh man! So who?
What about what's her face from Full House, whose daughter just went to jail?
I thought about her, Lori Loughlin. No, but she didn't make it.
She'd be online. I'll tell you that.
She'd get your kids into college. I'll tell you that.
Oh my gosh! If this person's not on there, John Winthrop just weighed in. If this person's not in there, Don, I'll go a step further. Not only is it wrong, it invalidates the entire list.
Really?
Okay, so this has to be it then. This is it. This is our first real controversy.
From a very recent and very popular program.
Winthrop's going to get it right because Winthrop, well, let's leave it at that. Go ahead.
From a very recent and popular program, one Sofia Vergara.
Number two. Number two.
There you go.
Sofia Vergara of Modern Family.
Great job by Winthrop.
Wow. Couple that didn't make the list, Jenna Fischer of The Office.
Okay.
Close.
Very
hot,
interesting.
No, cute more.
Bianca Kalich of Rules of Engagement.
Okay.
Yeah, that was a good show, man. That was
yeah.
a very good
Peter,
show.
Please Google Bianca Kalich. K-A-J-L-I-C-H. And you got the other ones that were close. Leah Remini. Oh, one other. Don, you would know this. Colby Smulders.
Oh, yeah.
Colby Smulders from
How I Met Your Mother. And we're halfway through. I DVR'd the entire season. Stumptown is actually very good.
Stump Merrill, right? His 2 years.
Oh, I love that one.
Yeah.
By the way, I really think that you should do it tomorrow if you don't want to seem like just a heathen. The top five most handsome men in
sitcom. You never know where I'm going with the list. You never know.
I hope we see it. Even Steven.
I'll tell you what, Peter.
Let's go over the list.
Incredible start.
Jen Aniston, number one. Sofia Vergara, number two. Christina Applegate, surprised everybody, number three. Kelly Cuoco, number four. And Julia Louis-Dreyfus, number five. The top five most beautiful sitcom actresses since 1990.
I feel good because we both contributed, Peter.
Yeah.
And you know, and when you get Winthrop involved, because he hates everything.
That's right.
Because I know why he picked Vergara. Let's just leave it at that. He's got a type.
By the way, it's definitely Leah Remini, and I'm being told that you're pronouncing Kaylee Cuoco's name incorrect as well.
How did I say it?
I'm not sure. I'm just
Kaylee Cuoco.
I always understood it as. It's not Kelly.
It's Kaylee.
You know, it's a big omission. A lot of people talking about it.
Tell me.
Tiffany Amber Thiessen.
Yeah, who are you taking out?
Julia Louis-Dreyfus. Next.
Also, so a lot of people that
he's
I did
not watching Saved by the Bell.
I did not go kids shows, so I didn't go Saved by the Bell. I didn't go Facts of Life. I didn't go Alyssa Milano from Who's Your
Well, that's
who's
80s.
Boss
well,
because no, she's
80s.
Young. Right. But
that's
I didn't.
If you opened,
Michael,
if you opened
younger,
up history, that's quite a list.
Oh, yeah. it became
narrow it down to five would be just almost impossible.
Yeah.
You'd agree that Betty White's on that list. You're going to laugh. Betty White would be on that list.
No, I'm not going to laugh. I mean, I remember her from...
Elizabeth Montgomery from Bewitched would be on the list. Lucille Ball would be on the list.
Lisa Bonet from The Cosby Show. I mean, I'm a different age
good
bracket
point.
Than you. But...
Good point. So there you have it. I think I've had two good lists in a row.
Very, very strong.
Yeah, matter of fact, I think it would be too much of a challenge to do history.
It couldn't be done. It couldn't be done. Somebody asked me, no Pam Anderson from Baywatch or Carmen Electra. I said sitcoms.
Not a sitcom. You got to listen. See, people don't listen, and it drives me crazy. Because I would get that, too, all the time with my top five. You forgot this? Well, I
agree. By the way, I agree with several tweets that I've received from people who said that in terms of your honorable mentions, they would have put Rashida Jones from The Office ahead of Jenna Fischer from The Office.
You know what? Also not a bad point. And Andrew, somebody had on my almost list, and it was tough to leave her off the top five. But, again, it kind of veered like on a kid's show. Mila Kunis from That 70s Show.
She was very young at the time.
That's not a kid's show.
But how old was she when she did that show?
Well, she was definitely over 18, but I didn't even want to get close to any, you know.
Good for you.
Did you
this list
Barbara
was
Eden
this list was edgy
history?
Enough for 2020.
Michael,
what was that, Donald?
Did you bring up Barbara Eden when you talked about like history?
Did not. That she
See
she,
that you can't you I would say to do history would be impossible. You had
you
to go 90.
You can't. So Peter when he does the list is going to go most handsome men in sitcom history.
That would be a great, great list.
I think so. Maybe I'll do it tomorrow. Anyway, that's the list. And coming up, as you know, last one standing. Very, very intense competition yesterday, which Don won. But did he really win? He used his caller friend. He used RJ. And we're on Wednesday. He has nothing. Nothing.
I got nothing.
For more than 80 years, Nissan has been there for you. And now is no different. We're offering flexible payment options for current NMAC customers. Our service departments are here to help. And for future owners, we're now offering more help. Deferred payments for 3 months on 11 models. Plus, we'll cover your payments for up to 2 additional months. Plus, get 0% APR financing for up to 60 months on 10 models. This is help when you need it. Visit NissanUSA.com today to learn more. Nissan, innovation that excites. Offers available to well-qualified buyers on purchase of an eligible 2020 Nissan from new dealer stock when financed through Nissan Motor Acceptance Corporation. Subject to NMAC credit approval and max term limit. Subject to residency restrictions. NMAC special APR cash amount is capped and varies by vehicle from $500 to $2,000, which customer can apply toward up to 2 monthly payments. Customer is responsible for all payments. Delayed payment must begin 90 days from date of contract. Accrual of interest commences from contract date and consumer responsible for accrued interest. Dealer participation may vary. Call 1-888-858-8319 for offer details, including list of eligible models and service availability. Offers end 6-1-20.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Yeah.
Catch the show on demand whenever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcast.
Two opponents enter.
I hate Don.
I'm Don LaGreca, sidekick to Michael K.
Only one makes it out.
Let's go with Don.
Who will win this deadly competition where the standings don't matter?
What?
We find out.
Okay.
In the latest edition of Last One Standing.
Welcome to Last One Standing. I'm your host, Peter Rosenberg.
Hell of a host, by the way.
Thank you. Thank you. It's been a tough week or so. It's been a tough week or so for Don.
Why? He won yesterday.
But last, emotionally, think about it. Think about what happened last week. He said he's going to win this week. Now, in order to do that, Don, you would need two more victories to get a 3-1 victory for the week, at least. Today, Michael will go first.
Okay.
However, today we are not going to be doing what we normally be doing.
Interesting.
And it will be another edition of
Don
Who
Hates These.
Am I?
Oh, God, what did I do to you?
It's just called running low on questions.
I just got to be better. Go ahead. So there is, it doesn't matter who goes first. Then.
No, it doesn't. And yeah, I don't believe the rumor that you aren't good at that. I don't believe it. You know what? I'll let Michael choose, actually. Since, Michael, you were to go first today, would you rather do Who Am I, or would you rather go back and forth in a category?
Who am I?
He knows.
Not so, I've
only got one out of six. I'm one for six. That's not good.
I don't think the Don's very bright, but his synapses don't fire as quick.
No,
as other
very
people.
Slow.
He's got to think about things.
Well, guys,
he took untimed test at Ramapo. People,
well, you
don't
saw
know
my reasoning process. It takes a while.
I think
I'll be great on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire officially, where they give you like no all the time in the world.
Right,
right.
I'd kill on that show.
But this is the real deal, and it's time for Last One Standing. And remember, guys, five guesses total per category or per person. I am an eight-time All-Star in my sport. I have won three championships in my sport. I have dealt with concussion issues throughout my career. I am Canadian.
Sidney Crosby.
How does Don not get that? How? How? How?
I told you, I'm awful at this.
How? I almost felt bad for Michael. There's no way he's going to get it.
I can't do it. I'm not good at this. I'm not good at... I can't do it.
Well, be better.
Don's
having, I'm right. I have to be better.
Don's having one of those video game, one of those video game glitches where you're just seeing the player move, like running into the corner and can't stop going to the corner. Your brain just will not do it. All right, let's try again, shall we?
How did you not get with concussions in three?
I know.
Wow.
I know. I was thinking like. He wouldn't go Daniel Briere. I was
overthinking it.
I'm overthinking. That's the problem.
I'm going to tell you something right now. Basically, with the Who Am I's, they are all pretty damn big names.
Okay.
Daniel Briere is not getting on this show.
No, it has to be someone I've heard of. That's correct.
Well, cool. Carlos Delgado was a heck of a player, but that's
fine. Delgado was on the way lowest end.
Yeah, all
borderline
right.
Hall of Famer. Borderline.
Right. And he's a borderline Hall of Famer. Here we go. I was a first-round draft pick. I am a current player. I have been to the Pro Bowl three times.
Jamal Adams?
As a rookie, I averaged 108 receiving yards per game. I attended the same high school once attended by the Manning brothers.
Odell Beckham Jr.
That'll be a drop on game. Thank you. And that'll be the day for Michael K.
Because then I was thinking, all right, Louisiana, LSU. Yeah, he's right. I can't get the center. It's over. I can't get better at it.
What, the high school is Theodore Isidore or Isidore High School or something?
Let's see. That was very funny. Oh, I was tickled by Don's attempt there at the end. Because he almost
just go with this exclusively.
No. You're going to get embarrassed.
I deserve to be embarrassed. To be that bad at it and not get better.
Are you ashamed?
I'm 1 for 8 now.
But I don't. Saying
I'm requesting that this be done exclusively.
No, saying.
I don't ask for much. But, I want this to be done exclusively until there's a vaccine, and I want to see if I could be like 1 for 106. I deserve it.
It's not fair.
How about that? I am not participating unless it's this. I
Isidore want Newman School,
to be embarrassed. I deserve to be embarrassed. Peter, if you have any love for me whatsoever, this exclusively until a vaccine or at least I can prove that I can get better.
Now, you know what? I can't do that, Don, but for the entertainment of our audience, it doesn't count.
Okay.
We're going to do one more today just for fun.
And I'm going to try.
Here we go. RJ, hit the music. We're back for one more. I am a basketball player. I went to college for 1 year. In that 1 year...
Kobe Bryant? No, he wanted.
He didn't go to college.
See?
Carmelo Anthony.
I can't believe you went Kobe Bryant. In that 1 year, I won ACC Player of the Year. In my first professional game, I scored 22 points in 18.
Zion Williamson.
There it is.
Didn't even register.
And your only guess was someone like, who didn't go to college.
You know what it's like? It's like the gun goes off and I'm just still in that like running position. Like I don't hear the gun.
But how
I'm
do you guess a guy that didn't go to college?
That was a truly special.
Again, I overthink it. I know he didn't go to college. I even corrected myself after I said it. I'm just there's a blind spot there. That and college. I can't do either of the two. But no, I'm begging you, Peter, exclusively until a vaccine or that I can prove that you both agree. You know what? He's figured it out.
But it's unfair to me, Peter, because I have not used my phone or friends for the week, and I can't in this particular contest.
You know what? I just thought of a big mistake by Michael on his list.
What? Tell me.
Even though I can't remember her name. Hillary from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
I don't know if she cracks that five.
I got to look her up.
No way Michael watched that show.
I watched it.
Did you?
Yeah, I'm a big Jazzy Jeff fan.
Karen Parsons.
Oh, the Karen Parsons Project.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show? Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN. And now, with another journey through 80s Jersey, New Jersey.
Budweiser nips over Gypsy Pond behind Plexus.
Here's Don LaGreca.
All right. You get your breaks in this business, right? And you got to take advantage of them.
Have to.
So as you guys know, that I started at the Fan July of 1996. And I was an update guy on the overnight. So that was like the lowest rung you can be if you're going to be on the air. Mm-hmm. And I'm begging Chernoff, can I host? Can I host? Don, you're kind of a hockey guy. I don't know if you can host a show. I'm buying airtime with Jerry Recco in Red Bank, New Jersey, doing shows on Saturday afternoons. I'd work the overnight, drive to Red Bank, do a show with Jerry, just to get stuff on tape and just trying to get on, you know, get a chance to host.
And now look at the two of you are immensely successful.
Yeah, I'm very proud of that. I'm very proud of Jerry, too. So stage one of that opportunity comes in the summer of 99. It's the first WNBA All-Star game.
Oh, I remember like it was yesterday.
And it's in New York, and it's on the Fan. And I'm going to do updates, you know, do the IDs during the game, and then do updates for Richard Neer after the game. Richard Neer's late. Neer, the game ends. Richard Neer is not in the studio.
Maybe he was Richard Farr.
So Don LaGreca's
really?
Got to get
wait,
thrown
wait,
in.
Do you really want to go there, Peter? You want to take that back or not?
Take that back. Dump
Sorry.
That.
Sorry.
So I get thrown on the air for 10 minutes. Now, it's the middle of the summer. It's July 17. It's like in July, mid-July of 99. There's nothing. It's the MLB's not. There's no games that day. There's no story. So for 10 minutes, I actually talk about the feasibility of the WNBA working and did you listen to the game, whatever. Before I can even get a phone call, Richard comes in. But I got the 10 minutes on tape, so I make sure that I get it to Chernoff and that he can listen to it, maybe get the opportunity. He listens. He comes in. Did you listen to Don, I listened to the tape. He's like, WNBA, really? I said, well, it was right after the All-Star game. It was on our air. He's like, nobody cares. What do you do? He's like, I said, I didn't know I was going to be on the air. And he said, let me stop you right there. He said, you want to be on the air, right? Then you always have to be prepared to be on the air. All right? You can't use the excuse, well, I didn't have anything. You're doing updates. You're always a moment away from possibly hosting. You have to be ready. So I don't want to hear that as an excuse. I'm like, all right, I took that to heart, and that was something that I still, to this day, always be right. I always tell people, make sure you're always ready to be on the air, and it's not an excuse not to be ready. My next opportunity doesn't come until like a year and a half later.
Ooh. Wow. So he really
February
hated that 10 minutes.
It's February 18th. Oh, listen, Mike, I'm not kissing up to anybody. It was really hard to get on the air there. I mean, listen, this is in the heyday of the fan. Everybody wanted a crack to be on the air. Nobody was giving it up. You know, everybody was going to be staying there forever.
I bet so if I listened to a tape, I could pull a few names I think didn't deserve to be on the air. But keep going.
Oh, wow. I understand. But I couldn't get in there.
You still have the tape?
I'm trying my best to do it. So,
you
I'm
still
working
have the tape.
Of the 10 minutes?
Yeah.
It's got to be somewhere. I held on to it.
I would
but maybe we'll play it one day.
Oh, now it's
February 18th, 2001. It's a Sunday, and I'm working the day shift of doing updates. And the Daytona 500's on. I'm doing the updates. And I get a phone call. Mark Chernoff, Don, Joe Benigno's house is on fire. Can you host tonight? There's nobody else. I've made a bunch of phone calls. There's nobody else that can do it. Would you mind, you know, go home, get ready, and then come back to do the overnight, which would then be 1 a.m. on the 19th to host the show? So I'm like, wow, I'm finally getting my opportunity. I also found it odd that during the fire, Joe was across the street at his mother-in-law's house calling every 10 minutes to get the St. John score. I thought that was kind of weird. That was going on as he was watching his house burn to the ground.
Wait, is that true?
Yes, that is a true story. I've heard that too. Yeah,
that is absolutely true. Okay,
wonder if he had a little something on the game.
So I don't know, but I felt bad for the guy. This is no joke. His house burned right to the ground, Peter. But I'm
no,
just
I've
saying
heard that it, story. I know his house burned.
Now, so they need. So, all right, as I'm getting ready to go, Dale Earnhardt crashes into the wall.
Oh my God.
Don't think anything of it, and nobody really did at that moment because it didn't look like that bad of a wreck, right? My shift is over. I'm driving home because I'm going to go home, get a nap in, rest, get ready because this is my big break. I'm hosting an entire show. And you could say, well, it's the overnight. That was a big spot. Michael will tell you. At that time, Joe had a show. People listened to that show.
Well, and by the way, and if you've never had a shift, any shift, right, particularly in New York, is a big deal, even if it wasn't.
Now, I'm driving home. Listening to the radio, find out Dale Earnhardt's dead. All right. I get home. Nancy's devastated because she loved NASCAR. Dale Earnhardt's a huge name. Now, what do I do? This is New York. I just got reprimanded because I talked WNBA. Do I talk about Dale being dying? So Ray Martell was my producer. You know Ray.
Sugar Ray.
And I came in and I said, my instinct tells me I've got to cover this story. He's a huge name. I know it's New York. And I know I'm probably going to get killed for it, but I think it'd be worse if I go on the air and it just in the updates and I'm talking, you know, whatever, you know, spring training baseball. I mean, this is February, so there's not a lot going on anyway. And Ray and I said, you know what? I think you got to go with your gut. So I did from 1 a.m. until Imus at 5:30. Wall-to-wall Earnhardt. Guests took calls. I left the studio driving home thinking they're never going to put me on the air again. First opportunity, I talked WNBA for 10 minutes. Now I did probably the first host in the history of New York to do an entire NASCAR show. And I'm done. Now, you know how that works in this business, Michael. You never get complimented. All you ask is that they put you on the schedule again. So I never get any feedback. All I know is Chernoff called the next day, said, Joe's out for the rest of the week. Can you do the rest of the week?
Oh.
And I said, absolutely. Did the rest of the week. And right after that, I started doing weekends, filling in here and there. And then eventually in 2000, later on, in a few months later, I go to ESPN and become the talk show host that I am now. So I got that opportunity. I think I did the right thing, but the fact that they let me do the rest of the week tells me, you know what, I did the right thing. And
now, he never said you did the right thing. He just by giving you the shows, that was him saying he did the right thing.
Here's how I think it went down. I never asked Mark about this. I think I did the wrong thing, but it turned out to be right because that's all Imus did at 6 o'clock in the morning the next day, because Imus was a NASCAR fan. That's all he did. And then Mike and Chris did it, because I don't think anybody understood at the time how significant it was. By the next day, I think they realized they had to do it. So I wouldn't be surprised that after that show, Turner was like, really, NASCAR? But I think everybody realized. And I think people
understand. And you got phone calls?
Yeah, wall to wall, never stopped. It was.
Wow. I have a lot of holes in this story.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, a lot of questions. Number one, why did Joe take the week off? A trip to Vegas?
Well, his house burned down, so he had a lot of things he had to put together. He had to piece his life back together. It's no joke. I tell it jokingly that he called, and he did call about the St. John score, but I don't want to underestimate how devastating it is to lose your house.
Number that's for sure. Number two, more questions here. I remember Dale Earnhardt dying very well. I understand New York wouldn't typically be NASCAR talk, but I got to tell you, Don, I see it as like a total no-brainer. What on earth would you have covered on a random February overnight, the day the most celebrated NASCar driver of all time gets killed?
Help me out here, Michael. You know how New York is and how centric it is to their thing. I believe I did the right, but I don't. Michael, do you agree that it's a no-brainer?
At that time of the year, Don, probably a no-brainer, because no baseball.
Well, I was nervous about it.
Well, I understand you being nervous. It was your first show. Sure.
I don't know if anybody else would have done the same thing. I think by the time they got to the next day and realized the national scope, because here's the deal. If you don't follow NASCAR, and if you're like just centric to New York sport, you may not understand the significance of him.
But I don't follow NASCAR, and I was, what year was this?
2001, February 2001.
I was a 22-year-old who did not follow NASCAR, and I still remember the world stopping when Dale Earnhardt died.
Right.
So it was a no-brainer call.
No. It did stop, Peter. But I think that swung the hearts and minds of people who were probably just thinking, who cares about NASCAR? You don't think that there were some people that are like, in February, why aren't you talking about Mets and Yankees spring training? Why aren't you talking about, Knicks and Rangers?
Those people are as stupid and irrelevant now as they were then.
Help me out, Michael.
Strong.
They exist,
but they're morons. You wouldn't program for them. You should be talking spring training in February over the death of an icon? Well, they're fools.
Because I don't know if everybody understood the kind of icon he was.
Also,
I knew because I followed NASCAR and I understood it. But it was so. I'm sorry you feel there's holes in the story, but that was my first big break.
Have you ever considered that Chernoff didn't think you did the wrong thing or did the right thing, or as I feel it's happened in my experience, things that I consider to be a huge opportunity, they don't even listen. They just didn't hear anything bad, so you go back and do it again.
I think
that Don brought up a good point though. Once Imus did it.
Yeah, but I just wonder if
he had, like at the end of Don's shift, he said, what a moron, he's never getting on the air again. And then he listens to Imus, and it's all about Earnhardt. Then he listens to Mike and Chris, it's all about Earnhardt.
The interesting question is how much did the program director at that time listen to the overnight show, even though you were a first-time fill-in?
Constantly.
He listens to everything.
He's one of those leave-it-on-all-night guys?
Yeah, he listens to everything.
I remember when I first started doing updates there, I was taught that you kind of alternate Mets and Yankees. So this was 96 when I first started doing updates there. So in the summer of 96, the Yankees are...
I guess those rules aren't in place anymore.
They're in a pennant race, and the Mets were god-awful. This was the Lance Johnson Mets. This was just really bad Met baseball. But what I would do is, like, one update I'd leave with the Yankees, next update I'd leave with the Mets. And it was, like, right after my 3:20 in the morning update, on, like, a Sunday morning, he calls and says, Don, why would you leave with the Mets now? They're out of it. So, and I was like, wow, this guy's listening Sunday morning at 3:20. No, he listened constantly. He listened. And, I'm guessing, maybe he thought I did the right thing. But the point is that I was still nervous wondering if I did.
All right, now let's extrapolate this out.
Yes.
So, Timbo McCarthy comes after you, makes you an offer. Do you go back to fan? Did they not want you to leave, or you just took the offer?
No, it was a full-time offer. I was working part-time. I was like an independent contractor. I got paid per shift when I worked at the Fan. I was working 4 or 5 days a week, but it wasn't full-time. I was getting no benefits, and I was just getting paid per shift. So when I went to ESPN, and that was Steve Malzberg, who recommended me to Phil Boyce at the time,
mm-hmm.
who was the de facto program director of ESPN because he was also the PD at ABC, offered me a full-time job, benefits, the whole nine. So it was like a no-brainer. I just immediately gave my 2 weeks' notice to the Fan.
Wow.
And
very nice jersey tails from the crib.
Beautiful.
I didn't have
really
Peter,
really get
Michael
a look into him. His soul. You know what I mean, Peter?
Yeah, you do. You get an idea. Who is the man, Don LaGreca? I know now a little bit more.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, and on your smart speaker by asking it to play ESPN New York 98.7.
Hey, Alexa, play ESPN New York 98.7.